सबको बड़े सम्मान के साथ प्रेम से हृदय स्वागत. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he always conducted his programs and his life in that spirit, welcoming another person with love. And he said, that's the essence of spirituality. So many times people talk to me and say, well, I don't accept myself, I don't love myself, I've got to learn to love myself, and so on. Everybody is lovable. We have to find the lovability inside. There is lovability within every person, and spiritually it's very important to accept ourselves. We begin by accepting ourselves as we are. From there we can continue to grow. So in that spirit, I welcome everybody. Baba said, in the heart center there is a lotus. Each petal of this lotus has its own quality. Desire, anger, infatuation, greed, love, modesty, knowledge, detachment, joy, omniscience, etc. And he would always talk about this. He said there are petals in the heart and the mind moves from petal to petal. So you have different moods and so on. He says, within the heart is a space the size of a thumb. And here divine light shimmers. And the Upanishads talk about the thumb-sized Purusha in the heart. But we can say that's the clear space of good feeling. That's the most intimate, central place. When we hone in on what's at our very core, this is what he's talking about. Within this heart, there's a space the size of a thumb, and here a divine light shimmers. The sages have spent their lives looking at this light. Not looking for this light, but looking at it. Once they've found it, they focus on it. They contemplate it. This is the Spanda principle. This is the Shakti. This is the clear space of good feeling. To focus on that place. How divine, how magnificent is the light in the heart space. How marvelous is the heart center. How divine is the goddess Kundalini. As she unfolds, man's entire being is transformed. Muktananda says, O people, meditate, even to find the prized objects of your senses that you're looking for in the world. For these pleasures are all inside you, and you'll find them there. Everything you're looking for is within you. Your world will then become full of delight. Your life will become heavenly. When through God's grace this inner Shakti is awakened, yes, meditation begins to happen. Love the Shakti. Love the spiritual energy. And honor yourself. Meditate within. Meditate on the inner Shakti by whose power you consider yourself you. Meditate on her by whose grace you love each other and surrender your souls to one another as husband and wife. The gracious and divine Shakti lives in both of you as your very own form. She is the same Shakti that Muktananda adores. So worship that Shakti, the center of things. And spirituality is the quest to discover that center. It's described so many different ways. The core of our being, peace at our core, the energy, the love at our core. And each of us has to make that journey for ourselves and to find that place within ourselves. And it's not a fiction. It exists within us. The sages have told us that, and we've had experiences of that too. So we have to know that it's there, and we have to learn the art of finding that place and then staying in that place. Because there are many tricks of the mind that take us away from that place. And when we listen to the trickery of the mind, we move away from that place and we go back into suffering. So it's all very simple and it's also very hard. It can be learned in a second and it can take you a lifetime to master. So in that spirit, I welcome you all. And I also want to welcome everyone watching. on this Mother's Day weekend. We've got a lot of people watching around the world, in the United States, in New York, in Ann Arbor, in Canada, in India, in Japan. And I want to welcome Maggie, who's watching in Spain. She finally got an internet connection. Very good. In Serbia, and all around Australia, different places in Adelaide, and at least three different places in Brisbane are watching. Welcome to all of you. And two places in the Sunshine Coast, and up in New South Wales, and here in Mount Eliza, all kinds of people are watching. Must be ill or indisposed. Welcome, all of you. And in Melbourne, people are watching. Special shout out to Salochana and Shami in Melbourne. Okay, tonight's Mother's Day, and I traditionally honor the mother by celebrating one of India's greatest saints, the first great saint that I met after my own mother. They say the mother is the first guru. So you're very lucky if your mother was a very good guru and helped you to grow. but the first saint that I met in India was a woman saint named Ananda Maima. And here's a picture of her. That's what she looked like when I met her. I met her in a little place just outside of Delhi, and I was traveling at that time. I made a connection with some of Ramdas, the American spiritual teacher's followers, including Bhagavan Das and our old friend Krishna Das. And they were chanting as we drove. I had the Volkswagen bus, and they were in the bus, and they were chanting away. And the first stop we made was to meet Ananda Maima. And I remember meeting her, I was thinking, now what's this about? Because I didn't know what you did with a saint. I knew I wanted to go to India to meet somebody who had wisdom and could teach me, but I didn't really know what was about. I certainly didn't know anything about Shaktipat, or that there was a transmission that could take place in the presence of a saint. So I remember meeting her and being rather confused by it. But she was one of India's greatest saints. Here's a picture of her, much younger. And she was actually a spiritual genius. She was spontaneously awakened. And she had spontaneous kundalini awakening. And many kriyas happened, many movements of the kundalini happened to her quite spontaneously. And then she never had a guru in form. She became the guru and the disciple and had this strange sadhana where she would do this thing. So there she's doing a kriya. She's in some kind of meditative trance as a very young woman. And here's another one. This is later, after she'd attained the self, and she'd become a very beautiful, serene, bliss-permeated mother, they called her. And she was famous all throughout India. She was born, as I remember, in 1896, yep. And she died in 1982, just before Baba did, as I've told you many times. That year, there was three great saints, and the Sagadatta Maharaj, Baba, and Ananda Maima, all around the same time, between late 81 and 82. And she lived as a householder. She got married, okay. And her husband became her disciple, as all husbands should, especially if your wife is a spiritual genius. So all you have to do is become a spiritual genius and your husband become your disciple, or else kick him out. But he followed her around, and she had, she's a very peculiar saint, and she would have what she called kayals, which she would suddenly have a desire to do something, and then she would do it. She would leave a place, she'd jump into a car, very much like Nimkoli Baba. She'd jump into a car with a devotee and go off, no one knew where. She'd show up at one of her other places. She had ashrams in different places. She would suddenly want to eat something, so she'd eat 80 chapatis. And then other times she wouldn't eat for weeks, you know, so. But also, she had a mind like a steel trap. She's very smart, and she had Vedantic understanding, and she answered things very strongly, although she would always talk about herself in the third person as this child, or this little child says this, and then she'd give you very strong teachings. And she was known throughout India. Baba met her. Gandhi met her. Yogananda, if you've read the autobiography of a yogi, she meets him in that book and the picture of them together. And event at the end of her life, she became Indira Gandhi's guru. So very accomplished. So these are some dialogues with Sri Anandamayi Ma. This is from October of 1960. The writer says, this evening, Swami Akandananda of Vrindavan gave a brilliant talk on anger. So they're having satsang, and one of the places she went is Vrindavan. Vrindavan is where Krishna was born and had his leelas. It's on the sacred Yamuna River there. I visited there a couple of years ago. Beautiful place. So he gave a talk on anger. The main points of it were that desire is the cause of anger. So desire, what do the yogis say? The yogis say, what is anger? Frustrated desire. You can see that in a kid. What is it? You can't get what you want. You get angry. Isn't that true? What else would make you angry? You can't get what you want.
When people are annoying?
People are annoying. They're not the way they should be. Right? And it says, so desire is the cause of anger, and ego is the cause of desire. If you didn't have ego, you wouldn't want, because then you'd have everything. It goes on, unless one surrenders completely to the guru and becomes absorbed in his service, anger cannot be conquered. Anger, this is the writer saying, anger is a fire that saps the atmosphere generated by one's spiritual endeavor and interrupts the current of one's sadhana. So that when you get angry, when you're practicing, when you're trying to grow spiritually, and you get angry, you lose all your shakti. And there's a story Baba used to tell about the yogi Vasishta, wrote the Yoga Vasishta, and the yogi Vishvamitra. And Vasishta was a man, a sage of knowledge and wisdom, always even-minded, because he always used his sharp intellect to remain in a calm place. But Vishvamitra was a vital yogi. So he did intense tapasya, intense penance, intense practice to build his shakti. And he would do incredible austerities, and he would control his mind by force. And he would grow in shakti. But then he would get angry, and he would lose all his shakti. So this is what happened. And then Baba tells a story where Vishvamitra and Vasishta had a contest. I won't tell you who won. You have to pay for the pay-per-view for that. So, but anyway, so this is what happens when you're doing your practice and then you allow one of these negative emotions. It doesn't just have to be anger. It could be jealousy. It could be fear. It could be despair. When you let one of them in, you lose all your energy. Not permanently, but until you can repair the damage. So that's what he's saying. A little later, the writer says, during the half hour in which Mataji, who's Ananda Maima, usually replies to questions, people refer to his talk. Question. Mataji, I've noticed that sadhus who live in places such as Gangotri, that's very high up in the Himalayas, and can do, such places as Gangotri, and can do without clothes and blankets in the icy cold of the mountains, are those who get most violently angry. How is this to be explained? It's a very funny question, isn't it? They need a little bit of warmth. Anyway, Mataji says, Ananda Maima says, as long as one is not established in the state where no more I and you exist, where one knows by first-hand experience that the self is one and all-pervading, how can anger be wholly conquered? Then notice she moves away from this whole premise about Gangotri and sadhus there, but says, when you're not established beyond the ego, when you're not established in the highest state, there's still going to be anger. Question. What difference is there between such a man and God, and someone who's established in that state? Moreover, have you ever come across a human being that is incapable of anger? Ananda Mai. When this body was very young, someone asked, we hear that even the rishis could get so angry that on occasions their anger burnt people to ashes. The rishis are the ancient sages of the Upanishads and the Vedas. They're great yogis. But it's true that occasionally if you cross them, they would burn you to ashes. Wouldn't that be nice to have that power? How then can you expect us to conquer our anger, they asked. She's saying that they asked her when she was a little girl. How can you expect us to conquer our anger? Because the rishis themselves, these great beings, used to do this. She says, this body has had no education and in that time had not had any satsang with sadhus and mahatmas either, great beings. It replied, so what is she saying? She's saying the answer came purely from herself. She had no scriptural knowledge and no one had taught it. So the answer she's about to give just came spontaneously to her. She said, yes, it's true that the rishis could burn someone to ashes, but they also had the power to call them back to life, whom they burnt. Their anger was on quite a different level. You are unable to create, so you should not destroy either. So if you have the power to restore someone to life, then you can burn them to death. That's the rule of handy rule of thumb. Handy rule of thumb. Makes sense, no? Question. Suppose I have a picture of my mother. Good for Mother's Day. And someone comes and knocks it down. Should I not get angry? Mataji. No, you should say to yourself, my mother herself has knocked down the picture. Whatever happens is her doing. So the mother who's passed on becomes God. Question. Suppose I have a picture of my mother in my heart and someone insults it. Should I not get angry? Mataji, no, you should say, mother herself has spoken. The mother has spoken in that other form. She is all-pervading. She has spoken in this manner so as to test my endurance, to give me a chance not to get angry, even when there seems to be a very good reason for it. That's pretty intense, isn't it? Here's someone in the audience quoted a verse from the Ramayana in which it is said that if anyone abuses one's guru, one should not listen and avoid the company of the scoffer. So they abuse your guru, then maybe you should get angry, right? So she says, the quotation is very beautiful indeed. At a certain stage, this is the right behavior. So anger, have to move away from anger. Actually, you have to move away from what we call here the downward shift, that which loses spiritual energy. Spiritual energy, as Gurdjieff said, is very delicate, easily lost. It's hard to attain, but once attained, you can easily lose it if you let your mind move in the wrong direction. So you have to be very vigilant, and you have to keep looking for the path to the Shakti, that which uplifts and that which helps you grow. Another one. This is October 26, 1960. Question. It has been said that in 1962, the planetary constellations are very inauspicious and that there'll be a great disaster in the world. What is the means to save ourselves from it? Mataji, you hear people say all kinds of things, and since you're full of fear, you feel apprehensive. Remember that there is a state in which there is no fear. To attain to that state must be your endeavor. So saying, don't worry about astrological predictions. If you're established inside, tread the path that leads to fearlessness. You must have recourse to the means which is no means and beyond all means. What does that mean? Means beyond all means and no means. What? Well, there are many means to get to God, but ultimately you have to go beyond all means to establish yourself in God. So it's very paradoxical. She says, in the world there's always some trouble or difficulty. Some planet or other is always making a bad aspect to something. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Certainly. Is there a big bad one coming up soon?
Yes.
Is there a good one coming up soon?
Jupiter comes behind it and the S hits the fan and then Jupiter comes along and says, it's okay.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I won't ask you when. They're going to all rush up to you after. What's the time frame? What time frame are we looking at?
November of next year.
Oh,
that's a just
long
next
way year. Off. Oh, eat, drink, and be merry till then. The only way out is to reach a condition in which one is not afraid of anything. Question, but what about the rest of the world? Mataji, first become fearless yourself. Question, what is your opinion about the prophecy itself? This is 2 years before this thing happened. Mataji, this body does not reply to questions of this kind. Not going to answer. What happened on that, at that time? Was there some big tragedy?
The Cuban missile crisis? Cuban and Gorbachev or...
Yeah.
One of the,
not Gorbachev.
Whoever was died during that time.
But the Cuban missile that didn't blow up the world.
Almost to the day that it hit exact. And which I think eventually led to the downfall of Russia after he died.
Well, it's bad for Russia.
It was for them.
Another one. Question. We're asked to practice self-restraint and sadhana, spiritual practice. We're trying our best, but we do not find God. What are we to do? A lot of people go through this period when they're practicing, they're saying the mantra, they're meditating, but they don't feel they're getting anywhere. They're not having inner experiences. Mataji says, do not relax your efforts. Go on steadily. Just as when you study, you pass your exams and become an officer automatically, and in course of time you get your pension, in the same way in the spiritual field also, if you persevere and continue with steadfastness, everything will come to you of itself. You know, in the Sai Baba temple, they have two words, Shraddha, which means faith, and Saburi, which means steadfastness. It means And it's a great concept to have faith in the goal and be steady. Keep to it. You don't do it for 3 days and then say, no, I'm getting nowhere and give up. You just keep at it doggedly. This is real strength. And you keep working with it. So have Saburi saying, question, what you said gives us great hope. And Mataji says, it is indeed as has just been explained. In other words, what I just said is true. Let's see, okay. This is, again, 1960. April 23rd, 1960. During the satsang, two men came to talk to Mataji. One of them asked, how can I get the vision of God? Please tell me the easiest way to it. That's the way Indians often formulate how to be self-realized. They want to have satkar, to have a vision of God, see their deity, Krishna or whoever. They want to have a vision. So Mataji says, seek him for his own sake. The man says, which is better, the path of devotion or that of knowledge? Mataji said, adhere to God's name. Repeat the mantra day and night and get engrossed in its sweetness. Very interesting, isn't it? Baba used to emphasize the mantra repetition too. Mantra repetition is a great and simple path. A great and simple path. The path of the mind is very good if your mind is very strong. If you know how to discriminate and you can clearly see when you're going in the wrong direction and move yourself in the right direction. The only trouble is that most of us have vitiated minds. And the mind works all right when you're in a good space, but when you get into a negative space, the mind becomes useless because it's vitiated by the negative space you're in. So if your mind's full of tearing thoughts, negative thoughts, and anger and fear, it just can't function properly. So the mantra then is very valuable because I like to say it's a no-brainer. You don't have to think about it, you just say it. You don't have to work out which is the right way. You just say the mantra, and the mantra itself helps quiet the mind. So Ananda Mayama too values that. Repeat his name day and night. Question, when I had better eyesight, I used to read many books, but now this is impossible. How will I gain understanding? Mataji, turn to God, say the mantra. He will give you understanding. Second man, Mataji, give me your blessing. Mataji, pray to God and you will feel his blessing. Is he getting a little testy with them? I don't know, maybe not. A lady from the audience blurts out, you said seek God for his own sake. Well then, if I seek him with selfish motives, won't I find him? Mataji, this is interesting. Of course, if you seek God with whatever motive, like you seek God for what? To find a husband, to be wealthy, whatever. If you seek God with whatever motive, you'll get something from him. And if you pray for anything of this world, you'll also obtain it. Yet the things of this world are not worth praying for. One should seek God, not with any motive, but solely for his own sake. Neither should one feel concerned about one's spiritual progress, for that this is also not unselfish. So you see, for one thing, when you seek God, it's not for nothing you seek it. When you actually attain a bit of God, you feel so wonderful. You're bathed in joy. You're bathed in love. So that's not nothing. You might not have the big house, but you're full of joy. Meanwhile, the person living in that house is full of misery. So that's much more important. He says, seek God because it's your nature to do so, because you cannot remain without him. Our true nature is consciousness. Our true nature is the self. So he's saying, seek that true nature. Not God up in the heavens, but seek your own self, your own truth. And that's your true nature. And it's the nature of every person to end up on the quest for their own self, to find out the answer to who am I and to get in touch with that. She says, whether and when he will reveal himself to you rests with him. Your duty is to call out to him constantly and persistently and not to waste your energy on anything else. In other words, do your practice. It's not fitting to compare and reason, saying, such and such a person has been engaged in sadhana for so many years and yet has not reached anywhere. How can you possibly judge what is happening to anyone inwardly? At times it occurs that a person while practicing sadhana appears to have changed for the worse. How can you tell whether certain undesirable tendencies had not been hidden within him and been brought to light through his spiritual endeavors? So sometimes in the practice stuff comes up, and sometimes you have to live out some negative tendencies. And a person who's doing well, suddenly something comes up and they deviate intensely and go off and lose the thread of their sadhana. But it's all for the good in the long run, in the big long run. To say, I've performed so much sadhana but no transformation has been effected, is also not the attitude to be taken. This is all about saburi, isn't it? It's to hang in there and don't complain, don't whinge, and just do your practice, and it's bound to happen. Bobby used to say, you know, you do your work and you get your paycheck. Don't worry about it. All that you have to do is call out to him unceasingly and untiringly, and not to look for the results of what you're doing. Well, it doesn't mean you have to sit there going, God, 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 God. If you like that, you can do it. Not particular to my liking, but it means you focus on the highest. You focus on that place. However you conceive it, everybody will be a little different. But you focus, I like to focus on the stream of Shakti. This is the non-ordinary divine energy that's within all of our reach, and to focus on that. And I'll give you my secret. I use a special method to focus on that energy. I think of my guru. When I men think of him, I'm immediately connected to that. Now I've told you my energy. I'm going to retire. I told you my energy, did I say, or my secret? But I think you know that already. My guru is my secret. He's my path, he's my method. That's it. Who can tell whether you're not be the one to succeed? Question, sometimes I feel desperate because I do not seem able to succeed. Mataji, you feel desperate when you have desires and they remain unfulfilled. But when one aspires to God for his own sake, how is it possible to feel desperate? She said. What do you think of her? Pretty good? Strong? I got two short ones. You ready for them? Maybe we'll get a different answer this time. It's all 1960, both in 1960. During Mataji's darshan hour, someone asked, how does the remembrance of God come? By attending satsang and listening to religious discourses? And Mataji says, to some people, the remembrance of God comes easily. They cannot remain without it. In this way, they keep satsang with God. When repeating a mantra, one of God's names, he is present as that mantra or name. That's another thing, Bobby, you say, that the mantra is the form of the guru, or the form of the divine. So if you repeat it, you have it. You have an immediate connection with that higher power. Even if you don't feel it, you're saying that, and eventually it will help you get in touch with it. One should bear this in mind. Some say they go on repeating Ram, but to no effect. The benefit derived from one's practice depends on one's sincerity and fervor. Kirtan, chanting, satsang, listening to religious talks, etc., are the means of sustaining the remembrance of God. When one speaks about him or sings his praises, he himself is present. So when you talk about the self, when you talk about the divine, then you bring that in. Most of the time we talk about really mundane, even negative matters. And we gossip negatively about something and so on, and then that brings in the energy of that. But if we think about noble things, about consciousness, about love, about luminosity, about Shakti, then we bring that in. Very simple, isn't it? And finally, we'll take this one into meditation. In reply to a question, Mataji said, "It's difficult for the householder always to find opportunities to sit down in his shrine room for his prayers or meditation. It's difficult to cultivate the company of saints and sages at all times or to attend religious gatherings frequently. But it is easy and always possible to keep company with God in the shape of his name or a mantra received from the guru." So another thing, very convenient. Easier than coming to satsang. This doesn't mean you shouldn't come to satsang. If you come to satsang, it's tremendous merit. It's worth thousands of repetitions of mantras. But if you can't come, then mantra immediately connects you. The thing is to be connected up. Now they always talk about connectivity. You know this word, new word in the new age, connectivity? It's where everyone wants to be connected up. They want to be on Facebook. They want to have the internet. They want to be so they can study Instagram and text people and do all these things, right? People die if they're not connected. They just die. But they don't realize that there's a higher connectivity. And that's to be connected to the divine, to their own self, to Shakti, which is way beyond the internet. It's the higher internet. And we should be connected to that, and then everything is nurtured. Every part of us, every corpuscle, every cell is refreshed and nurtured by that connectivity. She says, "One cannot constantly have an image or a picture of a deity in front of one's eyes, but the living presence of God as mantra can be one's constant companion under all circumstances." So the mantra is short, it's easy to understand, and it's always available. That's why these great beings stressed it. Let's meditate. And I celebrate all the mothers on this auspicious day. The principle of the mother, the divine mother. In Kashmir Shaivism, we worship the divine mother. The divine mother is the embodiment of the Kundalini Shakti. It's the divine active aspect of divinity. Shiva and Shakti, together they're one thing. So we worship that principle in every individual mother, and every one of us has a divine mother within ourselves. So let's meditate. We'll meditate for 10 minutes. And find that thumb-sized Purusha in your heart. A place inside of you that's still, yet vibrant, that's full of love, that's full of energy, that's full of luminosity, that is the closest of the close, the most intimate of the most intimate, the most motherly of all motherly things. And you can use the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, and repeat that. Let your mind become quiet and find that inner stillness. No one is going to find that for you unless you do, because it is only interior to you and no one else can come into your interior space but you. So it's up to each of us to find that place within ourselves. And the mantra is a great method to do that. So let's meditate for 10 minutes. And once again, with great love and respect, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath. Let's meditate.